From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Much of daily life in New Hampshire has shut down, with both a state of emergency and stay-at-home orders in place. As Granite Staters isolate themselves, many are in need of assistance. Families, individuals, businesses, nonprofits, all are searching for help during this tumultuous time. Today on The Exchange, we'll discuss ways that you can help out in your community during the coronavirus pandemic, whether that be through volunteering, remote support, donations of money, or materials. Many people have been sewing masks to donate to hospitals or healthcare workers. Others are volunteering for their local food pantry. Have you been helping out in your own community? Have you witnessed your friends or neighbors helping out in a special way? Have you been helped? Or do you know of a way that residents can get involved and volunteer while also maintaining physical distancing guidelines? Give us a call to join the conversation. The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org, or post on our Facebook page. Just search for NHPR Exchange on Facebook. That's all one word, NHPR Exchange. And with us this hour, Nancy Malone with the Coos County Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, Maria Devlin, CEO of the Red Cross's Northern New England region. She's with us by Skype. And State Senator and physician Tom Sherman, also by Skype. Thank you very much, all of you, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Nancy, I want to start with you and talk a little bit about Coos County Retired and Senior Volunteer Program. What does this program do generally, and how has your work changed since the pandemic began?
So, the Retired and Senior Volunteer Program of Coos County is a tri-county community action program. We have 395 volunteers, 287 actively served during our last reporting period, and it's usually nursing homes, hospitals, schools, Head Start, handy helpers, one-to-one volunteering, where they're visiting a shut-in. So the change is, you know, we're all trying to get used to our new normal. Many of us are working remotely. A lot of our volunteers are doing masks and gowns, phone trees. Volunteers are checking on other volunteers and clients. Food pantry volunteers are delivering to senior shut-ins. They're also helping with senior meal deliveries.
Has there been like an increase or a decrease in a particular type of volunteer activity, or has there been a change in the number of people who are volunteering? What's been different?
A lot of our seniors, of course, we're 55 or older, so we recruit people 55 or older and place them at nonprofits throughout Coos County. But we don't turn away any volunteer. So Tri-County CAP covers Coos, Carroll, and Grafton counties. And regardless of the age of the volunteer, I will not place the volunteer somewhere. I will find a home for the volunteer. And if I can't find it, and if it's out of my catchment area, then I will make sure that I call a peer that can get them placed. So, you know, our transit program is short on medical drivers. People still need to get the chemotherapy, radiation, and dialysis. Our domestic violence and sexual violence program in Northern Grafton County is short of helpline volunteers. Anybody interested, there'll be a volunteer training coming up soon. The number, if they want to call that, is 444-0184. You know, we make sure that the volunteers have protective personal equipment, masks, a shield, gloves.
And do you provide all that, or do they have to come up with it themselves?
Most of the stations that they're placed at, so for example, we have a lot of volunteers that are still delivering senior meals. So most of the stations will provide that. So senior meals is providing the gloves and the masks. excuse me. If someone wants to do one-to-one volunteering where they're visiting a shut-in or dropping off mail or prescriptions or groceries, and if there's going to be any human contact, then I would make sure that they have gloves and a mask and try to maintain as much social distancing as possible.
Mm-hmm. And about
we're being
how? Oh, go ahead.
Creative. I mean, we've got volunteers making masks and gowns with donated fabric. You know, we've got our knitting volunteers still plugging away for wintertime. We supply Coos County Family Health Services and Head Start with hats, mittens, scarves. Also supplies the homeless, Tyler Blaine.
So you've got a lot going on, it seems like, with volunteers making stuff, volunteers being connected with organizations that can provide them with PPE as they do their jobs. About how many volunteers do you have working for you right now?
At this time, it's hard to say, but my last active count was 287 or 288.
287, roughly, throughout the three counties that's in your catchment area?
Well, my catchment for RSVP is just Coos County.
Just Coos County, okay.
But I work for Tri-County Community Action Program. So if any volunteer in Coos Carroll or Grafton County needs a volunteer home, regardless of whether they're 55 or older, I will find a home for them. No volunteer gets turned away.
And so have you seen an uptick in the number of younger people who have been willing to volunteer? You say you don't turn anybody away. I guess that means if young people come through your doors looking for an opportunity, you're placing those people as well.
We are, yep. We've got some young people that have purchased their own PPEs and have been picking up pantry food and delivering it to clients, shut-ins. We've got some younger volunteers that have done grocery pickups for clients, as well as our senior volunteers. I mean, the senior volunteers, we've got one gal, for example, in one of the elderly housing, and it's like an outside housing, so it's not like this one big building. She picks up their mail, picks up their newspapers, knocks on their window, mm-hmm. puts their mail outside their door, waves. I mean, so everyone's trying to get involved, and we're trying to get as many people involved as we can and engaged. Again, short, really short transit drivers and really short for the domestic violence and sexual violence program.
Mm-hmm. And do those two types of volunteers need any kind of specialized training? And if so, do you provide that training?
Yeah, so there's a volunteer training for domestic violence and sexual hotline, and it's starting shortly. And again, that number is 444-0184. And if anybody wants to call Tri-County Transit, that number is 752-1741. And it's long-distance medical drivers. People still have to get dialysis. People still have to get chemotherapy.
Well, we'll make sure that we can put those numbers up in case people didn't happen to connect them, write them down while you were saying them. Stay on the line with us, Nancy. I'd love to turn to our other guests for a moment and ask Maria Devlin about what it's been like for the Red Cross in northern New England. Maria, how has the work that the Red Cross does changed since the pandemic began?
Yeah, we're in, a similar boat as Nancy and her team up north. So as you know, emergencies don't stop, and neither does the Red Cross. So we have continued to do our mission work throughout the pandemic. We've used a lot of the tools that we all have to now with social distancing and the protective gear. So if we get called to a home fire in the middle of the night, our volunteers sometimes do that work virtually to make sure that the family affected has a safe place to stay and receives the financial support that they need virtually. Or we do go out and we practice the social distancing that we need to. Our blood drives continue to happen throughout the state of New Hampshire and all throughout northern New England. And that's an area where we had to make a lot of changes with a lot more processes, protecting the donors and our staff at all of our blood drives.
Yeah, I imagine. And how has that program been specifically? Have you seen an increase or decrease depending on how people feel about the pandemic?
Yeah, right at the beginning of the pandemic, we obviously saw a massive decrease in the amount of corporations and schools and businesses that would host blood drives. We depend on our volunteer sponsors, such as a school or college or a business, to host us in their location and help get their employees, their students, or the community to the blood drive. With many cancellations throughout the state, we had to adapt very, very quickly. And we now have been working with a variety of partners, such as Elks Clubs, a bunch of different corporations that will open their doors to us still, churches, to be able to host blood drives now that require the donor beds to be 6 feet apart, where we make sure everyone has the PPE that they need in order to come in and keep themselves and our staff safe, as well as taking temperatures of people walking in. We've also had to go to mostly a donor appointment-based program instead of having walk-ins at our blood drives.
So if people want to give blood, they should contact you in advance or contact the Red Cross in advance and schedule an appointment.
Yes, that is imperative. It just helps us manage the donor flow and people walking into the building.
Mm-hmm. About how long does it take to donate blood?
So on a good day, it takes about an hour, get you in, do your health history, and then you give your blood. It's a health history that typically takes the longest time. Right now, it's about an hour and 10, an hour and 15, due to the fact that we're making sure that everyone has PPE and there's a lot more cleaning and stuff that happens in between each of our donors that come in.
I see. And so how great is the need overall? Is this your greatest need at the Red Cross, donated blood?
The blood donations are needed all the time because someone in the United States typically needs blood every 2 seconds, 2 minutes. So we need blood all the time. But one of the crucial things that we do need right now is actually plasma from COVID-19 recovered patients. So if you know somebody, if the listening audience has had COVID-19 and is recovered and has recovered enough so the doctor says that they are fully recovered, we want to be in touch with those people because they can donate plasma, which can then help the next COVID-19 patient who's in ICU.
Oh, I see. So that was why you would want someone who has recovered as opposed to someone who hasn't had it yet.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And I imagine this has been a pretty big impact on the Red Cross because I believe your work is run primarily by, 96% volunteer?
Yes, so we have volunteers throughout our entire organization, so 96%. So we have, within Northern New England, we have about 1,800 volunteers and a very small paid staff in comparison. We have volunteers who help at our blood drives. They basically help take temperatures, greet people. They help make sure that the donor flow, meaning that the donors are not bumping into each other, that they're maintaining 6 feet apart. Right now, that's an area where we definitely need volunteers to be willing and interested to help us. We do on-the-spot training, and if somebody is interested, they can go to redcross.org and look up volunteer and get that process started.
Great. Well, thank you for the tips, Maria. I really appreciate it. And stay with us, too. I want to have bring in a few comments from people. Don in Deerfield wrote in. He says, I'd like to volunteer to help any way I possibly can. My problem is I'm on crutches and I can't do any lifting. I can drive, but about the only thing that I can do until I have my surgery and recover is operate phones and a computer. Any ideas? That's the question from Don. So maybe put it to Nancy. I imagine you might get inquiries like this quite a bit. What do you think?
Yeah, and so a lot of people are, kind of just hunkering down, but we're finding stuff for them to do. So note to nursing home residents, note to elderly shut-ins, thinking of you, hope all is well.
So a little bit of emotional support, you think, sending out nice
and,
notes.
And a card is, who doesn't like to get a little note? Even if it's a handwritten letter or a typed letter, it doesn't matter. I suggest if you're sending it to an elderly person to make the font big, though.
Okay, make the font big as you write to the elderly. Now let's say if I wanted to do this, I wouldn't know where to start. I don't know anybody to send this to. Do you maintain a list of that, or is there a nursing home thing?
So you just give me a shout. I'd find out your location, and then from there connect you with the right people that you would need to be connected with, and then, you know, just figure out where exactly you belong or who exactly it could go to.
All right, Nancy. Well, thank you. If anybody happens to write to us looking for such a list, we'll be sure to put you in touch. Let's also talk to Greg in Keene. Greg, thank you very much for calling.
Hi, good morning.
Have you been volunteering, Greg, or doing something else that might be beneficial to the community?
Well, I run a computer repair business, and because people's computers have become so much more important in day-to-day life over the last, you know, month or so, what we've done is we've transitioned entirely to a pay-what-you-can basis. We've had people come in who, you know, they've lost their jobs, but their kids still need to go to online school in the morning, and they can't afford to take their computer to a big box store to get it fixed or anything else, so they come to us, we fix it up, we get it back to them, they give us what they can. I've had somebody pay for their repair with $5 and a can of tomato soup. One of the local farms had one of their major systems go down, and they gave me a jar of honey from their apiary. We're doing what we can to try to help out people because, you know, we can't fight COVID-19, but we can keep your computer running.
And if you can keep a computer running, as you suggested, you can help people connect over a long distance, which many people are doing now. So, Greg, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Before we take a break, I do want to turn to Senator Tom Sherman to get insights about the program you've been working on, Tom. It's the Senior Support Team. Can you talk a little bit about what was behind this group and what it does?
Sure. we started about literally about 5 weeks ago. This came from a brain trust from MIT Sloan School of Management. Three professors, Simon Johnson, Retzef Levy, and Valerie Karpeles, as well as a number of others, got together and said, we can pool our resources, we can pool our connections, and on a completely volunteer basis, do all they can to blunt the impact of COVID. Well, it turned out Valerie also happens to be my niece. And so I got a call one Sunday evening where she said, can you tell me about PPE? And out of this came two major efforts in New Hampshire, one of which was Valerie's work with Perry Plummer to create an airlift of supplies of PPE from China, which Valerie has worked extensively in China. And the second one is the Senior Support Team. In the past month, we went live just 3 weeks ago. The idea behind this is that we recognize that the elderly were the most vulnerable population to COVID, especially when they were close together, as in senior residential facility or nursing home, assisted living, or a CCRC. The goal was to help get every participating facility at an infection control standard of practice. So to do this, we created basically what we call volunteer liaisons, and there are two assigned to every participating facility. And we use a text messaging tool that was developed by one of the MIT professors named Vivek Farias. And Vivek is one of the world's experts in artificial intelligence. And what this tool does, we start with an assessment, which is just a very brief survey. And then every day, the facility will get a ping on a cell phone in the facility that asks, do you have any new cases of COVID? Do you have any needs that have not been met? And then there's a box for text in return. And then our liaisons will reach out to them as much or as little as they like. And we'll compile a daily report, which I submit to DHHS and to the Emergency Response Center. And then we also connect them to different resources. So we're not giving advice. We're making connections.
And this text message you get, sorry for interrupting, the text message you get essentially is an opportunity for a nursing home to tell the state in a comprehensive way exactly how many cases they have, the status of their residents, and the greatest or even any need they have for personal protective equipment or any other equipment that would help them follow CDC guidelines. Is that what I'm hearing from you, Tom?
That's exactly right. And the beauty of it, being a physician and having multiple physicians on our medical advisory panel, we all realize that everybody is busy and they don't have much time. So the idea of having a daily automatic connection that says, do you need help, is part of the sort of one of the main features of this. And then having that followed up with a human connection where you can get more details if the answer is yes. If the answer is no, there's no need for a call. There's no need for anybody to be bothered. But if there is a need for some assistance, we're right there. And
have there been examples, can you tell us an example of a specific place, or if you can't name a name, that's okay, but an example of a time where, you know, the call went out, the response came in, and the state came through with needed materials or support?
Sure. And I can't name names. We all have signed confidentiality agreements. You can imagine that with this level of involvement, the only reporting we do is to the state. We don't, you know, we don't go out and talk about specific facilities. And that's the way we develop trust with the facilities. But there was one facility that was down to really using, they weren't saying they were using garbage bags, but they were completely out of gowns and also face masks. And that was, you know, sort of hitting the panic button. And the interesting part was that their request did not make it through to DHHS through the normal channels. So our reporting to DHHS, the response was immediate. We were able to get the report over. I was able to underscore that response and the need to Perry Plummer, who was over at the EOC, and they were able to get their supplies within, you know, within the day. So the response from DHHS and the EOC when they know of a problem is virtually immediate, and it's been a wonderful collaboration with them. We also are working with ConvenientMD to make sure that staff have adequate testing if they are symptomatic. So one of the problems is that many of the staff don't have a primary care physician. So using telemedicine through ConvenientMD, they can have an assessment, and then ConvenientMD can make sure they end up with the appropriate testing.
Mm-hmm. Senator Tom Sherman, stay on the line with us. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll have more to say with you, with Nancy Malone and Maria Devlin. We got this note from Blake in Lyme when we asked, what has cheered you up or given you hope recently? Blake responded, the selfless sacrifice and generosity of so many people on behalf of others. And that's exactly what we're talking about today on The Exchange, volunteer efforts that keep the state going in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic. If you know of a way to volunteer, if you have benefited from volunteers, if you're an organization in search of volunteers, give us a call. We want to know your story. Our number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back. Tomorrow on The Exchange, in these times, many people are thinking more about end-of-life plans, from advance directives to wills. We'll talk about the logistics and how to navigate these conversations with family. If you've had some experience with this recently, has the COVID-19 pandemic made you rethink your end-of-life plan? Let us know. Send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. Today, we are speaking with a few folks who have been keeping an eye on the efforts of volunteers in the Granite State. Lots of people and organizations suddenly have urgent needs for assistance. So we're looking at what those urgent needs are and how volunteers are stepping up to meet them. So give us a call if you're a volunteer or have a need for volunteers, or if you've been working with them to get an important job done. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. With us today are Nancy Malone with the Coos County Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, Maria Devlin, CEO of the Red Cross's Northern New England region, and State Senator and Physician Tom Sherman. We'll talk with Nancy, Maria, and Senator Sherman in just a little bit, but we want to talk first with Teresa Walker. She's the founder of the Bedford Sewing Battalion. She's on the line with us now. Teresa, thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Peter. Thank you for having me.
So, Teresa, you and your daughter, Emily, have and the group as a whole have sewed over 10,000 masks. So that's great. Why did you decide to start sewing so many masks? What led you to this project?
Well, we started about 6 weeks ago, and like so many people in our state and across the country, we were watching the news and were horrified to see our medical professionals and have such a lack of PPE. We were also concerned about the potential for shortages of ventilators and ICU beds, and we didn't have the ability to do anything about that. But we did have some ability to address the mask shortage. We had fabric. We were able to put our hands on some elastic. And then we took to Facebook and put a call out to some neighbors and community members in Bedford, and they stepped up and drove.
How did they step up? Did they provide materials for you? Did people who have some sewing skills raise their hands and say, I can do some of this?
Both. We had the first people that reached out. Emily and I were talking. We joked that we started it one Friday morning, and it was like being shot out of a cannon. We went from zero to, 100 in the blink of an eye. And the immediate response was, I want to help. I can sew. I want to help. I can't sew, but I can cut fabric. And within a couple of days, we had community members in a local bank step forward and provide a substantial amount of financial support. So as I said, we're about 6 weeks into this, and we have over 550 members of our what we call our battalion. Many of them are sewing, but many of them, including myself, are more behind the scenes and logistical. We're organizing and procuring the supplies that we need and distributing those masks back out into the community.
Yeah. So how do you go about distributing them? Have you talked to hospitals, nursing homes? Are you handing them out on the street as people say, hey, I need a mask? What are you doing?
We call that mask bombing.
Mask bombing.
When we approach
okay.
strangers on the street and we hand them out. Yes, we do that. It's a little strange to approach a stranger while you're actually wearing a mask yourself, but I've done it, and I know a bunch of the members of our battalion have done it. But that's maybe not the most effective way to get them into the community. When we started this, the biggest requests that we were receiving were from local hospitals. And we did work and did a lot of work with Southern New Hampshire Medical Center, the Elliott, various departments at CMC. We did start on day one reaching out to them, and we thought that's how we would continue to distribute. But the requests that we received have completely overwhelmed us. We don't have time to reach out to organizations anymore. We're dealing with the requests that are coming in. And I would say in the last couple of weeks, the requests that we've received from the medical community have lessened or abated slightly, and we're seeing many more requests from home health care workers, essential businesses, a couple of towns where they're trying to bring some of their employees back to work where they need masks in order to do that. We've provided 300 masks last week to the Manchester Fire Department, but many, many home or individuals. We've done a couple what we call events where we just set up in a parking lot for an hour at a time, and mm-hmm. we give masks out to whomever shows up and needs them.
Okay. And about what percentage of requests for masks are you able to fill?
We are working not quite 24 hours a day, but close to it. We would like to fulfill all of them. There's been a couple of requests that we've received from for-profit companies that are requesting very specific masks that we don't make. So we haven't fulfilled those.
Because you're not making the so-called N95 masks, right? You're making just standard cloth. These will help prevent a cough kind of thing.
Exactly. We're making those, and we make a different style that a lot of the medical professionals like that have a pocket on the back where they can insert a filter. But for the general public, we don't make those because those filters are not widely available to the public.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I would say that in the last 6 weeks, we have not had an individual or a family approach us that we have said no to.
I see.
We've had a couple of times where we've said, it'll take us a day or two, but we'll get them to you.
So you're prioritizing families and individuals?
No. Those are easy because I'm trying to think. Our sewers are returning around 300 masks to us a day.
Mm-hmm.
So we can fill two masks here, four masks here, five masks there all the time. We do those consistently. The ones that we prioritize are the ones that come in for 500 masks or 300 masks, and we have had to do some prioritization. We had a request yesterday, for instance, of a company who wanted to reopen and bring their workers back, but starting in the summer, maybe June. That, unfortunately for them, but we did have to move them down the priority list, and we'll take a look at fulfilling that as we get closer to that date. We look for immediate need, who has the most immediate need, what part of the population is the most vulnerable, and we're trying to fill those needs first.
Well, Teresa, what is giving you hope right now in this incredibly difficult time?
What is giving me hope?
Yes.
Oh, I like to think that every mask that we make and distribute, and obviously the key component of making this work is that people have to wear them, right? It's no good if we give them out and people don't use them.
Right.
But for every mask that somebody wears, our community as a whole is a little bit safer. And I know it's very incremental. It's a little bit safer. But for every person who perhaps has the virus but doesn't pass it on to somebody else, we're all a little bit safer. And perhaps the stay-at-home orders that we're living under that are becoming a little constrictive will end just a little bit sooner. That's what's giving me hope.
Mm-hmm.
What's giving me hope.
Teresa Walker, founder of the Bedford Sewing Battalion with her daughter, Emily. The battalion has sewed more than 10,000 masks. Extraordinary effort. And Teresa says 300 masks a day produced by the battalion. Teresa, thank you very much for speaking with us. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Listeners, give us a call if you have a question or a comment about volunteering. We'd love to bring you into the conversation. If you have a need for volunteers, if you've been volunteering in an unusual, surprising way, making use of your time maybe while you're trapped indoors, volunteering virtually, give us a call. Let us know how you're doing it. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We get this note by email from Margaret, who said, "Is there a volunteer bank in New Hampshire where people can donate professional skills? I'm an editor and writer by trade. I'd like to donate my skills to help job seekers, small businesses, and progressive political and environmental causes." So I'll turn that to the folks still on the line with us. Nancy Malone with Coos County Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, Maria Devlin, CEO of the Red Cross's Northern New England Region, State Senator Tom Sherman. Maybe we'll start with you, Nancy. Do you know of any volunteer bank where people can donate professional skills that perhaps can be done remotely?
So we primarily focus on nonprofits and municipalities. So to help businesses, that wouldn't be our thing.
But is there a volunteer bank that you know of that maybe another organization keeps track of?
They could do volunteernewhampshire.org.
Volunteernewhampshire.org. Okay.
Yeah, and they pretty much, will place them, I imagine, wherever. I did want to add, and I neglected to say it earlier, we have blood drives throughout Coos County, Lancaster, Groveton, Colebrook, Berlin, and those are completely manned by Tri-County Cap RSVP volunteers. So they completely, in fact, I've been doing the Berlin blood drive for 20 years. People are apprehensive about giving blood right now, the social distancing. Our biggest issue with our last blood drive is that we couldn't get a venue.
Hmm. And I don't know if that's a similar situation with Maria Devlin at the Red Cross. What do you think, Maria? Is it difficult to even find a venue for blood donations now?
It has been at times, and that really has to do with the sponsors having the right amount of space and the ability for donors to access that space without a lot of trouble. So we have to check every single venue to make sure that it has the space that we need, especially with the social distancing. And we have to make sure that we can have our staff be able to attend those events as well. We've really condensed our blood drives to make sure that every single blood drive we're having now, we see between 30 and 50 people come in. So we're getting between 30 and 50 units of blood. And the venues really have changed their processes that they need. So many times, if it is a very small and more cramped space, we're not pursuing blood drives in those areas due to the social distancing right now. So we hope as soon as COVID is over, we will be able to go back to some of those drives. But definitely, the people who own those locations sometimes are hesitant to have the public be there, even though the governor has said that we are an essential service and blood drives and blood donors should still continue to come out.
We get this email from Christopher who writes, "My name is Christopher Lynch and I'm a junior at the Derryfield School in Manchester. I've been working over the past couple weeks with a classmate of mine and a teacher to gather unused Legos from members of our community in recognition of the stress and boredom many families and young children are facing during this strange time. We're still in the process of communicating for potential donations before we sanitize and deliver. We really got this started because we saw the potential that our friends, teachers, and community had to help improve how young kids are experiencing the COVID-19 lockdown and families that might be struggling to purchase toys for their children or keep them entertained." That's the note from Christopher with a focus on children. And I'll turn that to you, Maria, and maybe Tom, you have some insights on this. I don't know. What do you think? Is there anything the Red Cross is doing in particular to assist children and how they may be doing during this time?
There is actually. We have a variety of Red Cross programs that help children be prepared for times of emergency. So we have programming that goes from elementary school till about middle school. And if your listeners want to go to redcross.org and under Get Help, there's a variety of ways under it says Emergency Preparedness for Kids. So there is ways to download different apps. There's different activities that children and their families can do at home. There's an app called Monster Guard, which is interactive and kids can use it on a mobile device. There's a variety of ways that kids can learn different coping skills during times of emergency, as well as help them and their family be prepared while at home during this time.
Thanks for that. Really appreciate that. Tom, did you want to say something?
Yes, I just wanted to, you had asked about other volunteer opportunities. VolunteerNH.org is one that had already been mentioned. For medical personnel, they can join us by going to covidalliance.com/SST, all lowercase. They can also go to NHResponds.org, which is a great site. And both for kids and adults, there's a wonderful site through the New Hampshire government site, which is nh.gov/COVID-19/volunteers. And all of these are wonderful volunteer sites with, for example, in ours, our executive director doesn't have a lot of medical background, but he's just completely savvy on data. And we have Judy Joy, who is our head of volunteers, who's a nurse. We have Joan Widmer from the New Hampshire Nurses Association, Paula McKinnon, who's these are all people with a huge amount of background. But if you're somebody who has a data background, we can certainly use your help. And I think a lot of these other because so many people are working from home in their volunteer world, the ability to have somebody with some data expertise and tech expertise is huge.
What kind of tech expertise in particular? Like, do they know how to write code or is there a computer software that they're familiar with?
Well, ours, it's funny because ours in just the last 4 weeks, we've gone from nothing to a completely data-based program using all several different programs, including Google and chat rooms. And so that kind of, it just makes the whole process much smoother. So we have MIT grad students who are helping us with our data. They have MIT EMTs. We have PA students from MCPHS. We have retired nurses. We have a nursing librarian who keeps our library completely up to date. People from all different walks can join these different volunteer efforts, not just ours, and bring their expertise to bear. So I think there's a huge amount of opportunity at those sites that I just mentioned. I'm happy to send those along to you so you can get them on your website.
Thanks very much, Senator Sherman. Please do. We'd love to put some links up to our page, nhpr.org/exchange. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk a little more about volunteering opportunities. We got this one from Mike by email. Mike says, my 18-year-old son found a way to use his favorite toy, a 3D printer, to help medical professionals in a small way, printing ear savers, a plastic band that sits on the back of the head for masks to hook to instead of your ears. He found a design, tweaked it, and is printing 5 ear savers every hour constantly and giving them to the frontline heroes at Southern New Hampshire Medical Center. Even if all he's doing is making their ears less uncomfortable, I'm proud of him for helping. Thanks for the email, Mike. Really appreciate it. If you know of a way to volunteer, if you've been doing something unusual that's helpful to the community, let us know about it. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Or email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. More after a break. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and today we're talking about volunteers. Volunteers are stepping up to serve their communities in surprising ways during this coronavirus pandemic, and we're looking at some of those ways today, and we're also soliciting your ideas on ways to make use of time spent indoors. Are there ways that you've found to volunteer from your home? Let us know about it by phone. The number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email exchange@nhpr.org. We're speaking with State Senator Tom Sherman, Maria Devlin, CEO of the Red Cross's Northern New England region, and Nancy Malone with the Coos County Retired and Senior Volunteer Program. We got this note from Sherry, who wrote, Epsom Bible Church has unmanned no-contact tables outside the church doors, except when it is very rainy or windy. People take what they need, and others fill it right back up. Both church people and community people are helping keep the tables full. It is a good drive, and there is a town food pantry. This is not competing with, just complementing the town food pantry and giving more access for struggling families. I wanted to take a few minutes to talk a little bit about food and food insecurity and whether or not this has exacerbated the problem and whether your volunteer efforts are stepping up to fill in the gap. Let's start with you, Nancy, Coos County Retired and Senior Volunteer Program. To what extent are the volunteers under this program assisting with food insecurity?
So we have volunteers that are delivering senior meals still. And then, so that because there's no more congregate meal, they are also delivering a congregate meal. So seniors that would normally come to the Berlin Senior Center are not able to at this time, but they still need to eat. So they've upped their game, cranked out more food, so they're doing the regular shut-in deliveries, which volunteers are doing, and then they're doing also their congregate meal deliveries, which is added about 60, I would guess 60. I don't have the exact number. I would added those people also to their delivery.
So you focus primarily on meals that are already prepared as opposed to, say, boxes of dried goods, canned stuff?
It's both.
Actually. Okay.
So they're given, to the best of my knowledge, they're given shelf-stable food in case of an emergency. I know that they were donated toilet paper from the Cascade Paper Mill and Kieran Building Center. So they got food and toilet paper. Communications have gone out, flyers, note, you know, things like that to the shut-ins.
Mm-hmm.
So the volunteers are still delivering in all of, you know, in all of Coos County. It's not, it's, the other thing is the pantry is completely run by RSVP volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making sure that other volunteers are getting food delivered to shut-ins. We also deliver the New Hampshire Commodity Supplemental Food, you know, that comes out bi-monthly, every other month.
I see. So there are a variety of ways that your organization is making sure that people in your region are staying fed. Maria, how about the Red Cross? What is the Red Cross doing with respect to food and possible food shortages or people having trouble accessing it right now?
So when somebody has an emergency, such as a home fire, the Red Cross does provide financial assistance so they can get the food that they need for the time until other services can be brought in. But the way the Red Cross is helping some other local agencies is by providing kind of manpower support. So in certain places, we're working with the Salvation Army or other food bank type of organizations and helping them deliver. So it's not the Red Cross who is actually, you know, putting the meals together and doing that work, but the Red Cross can be a partner with other partners to provide that volunteer workforce to help deliver the meals to the communities that we serve.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Tom Sherman, you're working with the senior support team, primarily with nursing homes, which already have a kind of a food supply chain in place. Yes, is food insecurity a focus, or that's left to others?
Right, that's not as much of a focus for us. Although I would like to give a shout out to Gather, which is in Portsmouth. They're doing a phenomenal job. Rockingham Community Action down in Seabrook also has a food bank and pantry. And, you know, these food banks are stressed to the limit right now. They are seeing more people accessing them than they ever thought possible. But the other is just calling your neighbor. You know, it's the part of the what I really love about New Hampshire is how close we are in our communities. And it's not technically joining a volunteer organization, but calling up your elderly neighbor and making sure they have enough food, seeing if they need you to do a run to the grocery store where you'll hopefully wear one of your masks. And but to check in, there are efforts in my district, in my towns, where the towns are actually using lists of people who are at risk, whether it's through the Seabrook station list or other emergency lists, and making sure that they're getting called. Hampton is doing a great job at this with their rec department, calling every person who has been identified at risk and making sure they're okay. But we can do that with our neighbors as well. And I think while that's not traditionally volunteer work, it's looking out for those who may need help. And it's a wonderful way to reach out.
And it's in the spirit of what we heard earlier on the program of, if all you can do is write a little nice note to someone and send it along, that really does a lot of work in helping people lift their spirits during this strange time. Tom, along the lines of reaching out to people, we got this note from Jen who says, "My chiropractor called me last week to check in, not to see if I needed an appointment, but rather to ask if I needed anything from the store. He's aware I live alone, and during the conversation I mentioned I couldn't find non-latex gloves in my size. Shortly after, he delivered a bag of the correct size gloves. Hats off to Paul Malloy for making my day." That's from Jen, who sent us an email. Senator Sherman, you're also a physician. Can you tell us what would be most helpful to you as a physician? What ways could residents help you out or make life easier for physicians out there?
The number one way that people can make life, I'm a gastroenterologist. I'm not as much on the front lines, although I will be on call this coming weekend, so I'll be in the hospital. But for our hospitalists and our emergency medical providers across the state, as well as our intensivists and lung doctors, the number one thing we can all do is follow the governor's, you know, the governor's stay-at-home order. The reason New Hampshire is doing as well as it is because we've all listen to the governor, listen to the medical experts, and really, I believe we are blunting the curve by wearing our own protection when we go out in public, by keeping our social distancing, by keeping our going out to just essential chores. That's the most important. But also, I think the efforts like making masks, making sure that everybody is protected, has adequate protection, is equally important. And I went out and delivered masks donated by LDI Solutions, which is a company owned by Lou LaMarca from Hampton Falls. He went and was able to acquire a whole bunch of masks, and we were able to distribute them to our DPW workers after checking with the state and making sure they didn't need them. These were droplet masks, but they keep our workers safe in the towns. And so I think people can do just sort of changing how we live our lives for now and making sure that we are following the guidelines from the CDC and the Department of Health. And that way we will decrease the likelihood we're going to get sick. We'll decrease the likelihood we're going to expose the frontline healthcare workers to a patient with COVID. It's the best thing we can do as citizens of the state.
Mm-hmm. And so let me ask you to look into the future for the next month or so. Your senior support team obviously has some resources, but what resources, either material or volunteer, will you need in the coming month?
Well, the good news is we are getting a large amount of PPE coming in, especially toward the end of this week. Over the last week, you've seen it in the news. Again, I think one of the most important resources we will need is to keep the PPE supply. If you think about opening the state, one of the parts that really struck home to me is I was talking to one of our dentists, and he said, I donated all of my PPE to the places that needed it, and now I can't reopen my office because I don't have enough. That's the kind of sort of aha moment that we're all facing, is how do we reopen? We will need far more personal protective equipment than we thought we would need, because we're going to need it in our everyday lives. So that's probably the most important area for resources. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to, because our time is short, I did want to give Maria and Nancy a chance to weigh in on that same question as well. Maria, looking into the next month or so, as some things maybe start to reopen and people start to inch back into society, is there a volunteer need that you anticipate or a material need that you'll anticipate?
There's always volunteer needs. And from the Red Cross perspective, the way the communities can help us is to donate their time, to donate their financial resources, and to donate their blood. We have virtual opportunities as well. And I would be remiss if the writer or caller before, they mentioned virtual opportunities for people who write. We have a communications team who would love to be in contact with you. But we have virtual opportunities as well. But time, money, and blood is really the three things that keep the American Red Cross going for people who need us when emergencies happen.
Great. So that was Margaret who asked about, helping out professional job seekers with her skills as an editor and writer. Margaret, feel free to reach out to us and we can connect you with Maria, anybody else in that position as well. We can connect you. That's not a problem. Nancy, we'll close with you. What do you think in the next month or so? You've mentioned that you need drivers and you had another need. Is there something else that you think you'll need as people start to get back into the world?
Well, I mean, everybody's apprehensive about getting back to some sort of regular normal. But I just wanted to say that, Tri-County Community Action Program is one of five community action programs. They all need volunteers. So regardless of where someone is in New Hampshire, they could call their community action program and see what the need is, what their comfort level is. Do they want to volunteer from home? Can they drive? Do they want to go to a specific location to volunteer? So I think that getting back to our new norm will involve the PPEs. We've worked closely with New Hampshire Homeland Security and Emergency Management. It's one of our volunteer stations. And so we've gotten some PPEs.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nancy Malone with the Coos County Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, thanks very much for speaking with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And Maria Devlin, CEO of the Red Cross's Northern New England Region, and State Senator Tom Sherman, thank you as well for sharing your thoughts with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Maria Devlin and Senator Tom Sherman joining us by Skype. That's it for today, but we've mentioned a lot of resources on the program today. If you are looking for a link or a phone number mentioned today, check out our website, nhpr.org/exchange. We'll put them up there shortly so that you can connect with the resources that you want to connect with. The show's producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Michael Brindley is our program manager. Our regular theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Jane Vaughn helping out in a big way on today's program. Really appreciate that. Engineer is Dan Colgan. Remember, the conversation continues online on Facebook as well. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.